I think I'll just say I've got 6 children, because one of them is dead and one of them is adopted.
Okay. I, Marjorie Rudzinski, am conducting an interview with Faye C. Hallenbeck for the Orleans County Historical Association on June 17, 1980.
Now I'm on.
Now you're on. But Mr. Hallenbeck, before you tell me about your occupation of farming, I would like you to tell me a little bit about yourself and your early years.
Well, I'll be 91 next month. I was born on July 31st in 89. I was born in the town of Gaines on the Ridge Road just east of Gaines Village. Most of my life has been spent in this vicinity. Only a few years I didn't live in Olean, and a few years in Lockport when my father was working for other people, and I was a real small boy. But we come back to Gaines when I was before my teens, and then from then on I've lived in the vicinity of Gaines and Waterport and Clarendon, but all in Orleans County. I farmed it all my life. I never earned a dollar an hour in my life. When I was 18 years old, I worked for a farmer. I was the only man he had. I'd done everything there was to do, and I got $30 a month. Not an hour or a day, but $30 a month. My board, and again, my horse, yes, we drove horses all together, no automobiles. Do you want any more of my...
Yes, anything you want to tell me.
Well...
How about your wife, when you got married?
My first wife was Dula Miller, and she lived on adjoining farms. So after I call on her, I could walk home. Sometimes, though, we had the horse to take care of, but usually I could walk home. It wouldn't be daylight either. I didn't stay till daylight. I went home while it was still dark. When I was a teen, in my teens, I lived a lot of years north of Waterport. And at that time, there wasn't a telephone pole or a wire anywhere in the country. I well remember when they first strung the wire for the telephone. They call it the Home Telephone Company. And there was a lot of opposition to it. Some farmers didn't want the pole set on their land. And when they got the poles ready to set, the farmer and his wife would go out and they'd jump down into one of these holes, and the people that were trying to set the pole would go to another one, and they'd run over and jump in that hole so they couldn't set the pole. And another man named George Fuller, he gave him permission to set poles on his farm, but he wanted them set right along by the fence on the same line. For in those days, all the farmers mowed their own roadside, and he didn't want the poles out where they bothered. But they did set them about 4 foot outside of where he wanted them. The next morning, they were all chopped down.
Oh.
Nobody see anybody chopping, but everybody had a pretty good idea who had done it. But then the telephone company reset them, and they set them on the line of the fence where the farmer wanted them. That home, they call it the Home Telephone. And well, there was anywhere from 4 to 8 or 10 people on one line. Everybody had their individual ring, and everybody on the line got that ring. Some of them would be like one long and 2 shorts, or 3 shorts and 2 longs. Everybody knew everybody's ring on their line, and you could ring anybody on your line. Every home had a little telephone on the wall with a little crank on it. You could crank whatever you wanted, and you call anyone on your line. And of course, there wasn't many secrets told in those days. Every time the phone rang, somebody would go and answer it. Sometimes it'd be 6 or 8 on the same line, all listening. I don't know, there's much I can tell you about the telephone, but although my father took a team of horses in the wagon and strung the wire for all those phones. Did I say that when I was a youngster in the vicinity of Waterport, there wasn't a telephone pole or a wire anywhere in the country. And after the telephone company got organized, and they finally was hooked up with the Bell people, so you get places outside of the vicinity, which at first you couldn't. You could just call the people in that vicinity on your call. I worked with my father for several years. I quit Alvin School. I was going to Alvin High School. And my father had always worked for other farmers. And when he got $1 a day, the year around, that was top wages. And he raised his family. He got a few privileges along with that money. He got his potatoes and his firewood. The firewood consisted of old rails and apple tree wood that they drew up and threw off at the back door. And just as quick as Faye, myself, was old enough, they gave me a buck saw, and I had to saw the wood up so it fitted in the stove.
Uh-huh.
It was full length when they brought it there. It was 8-10 feet long, and I had to cut it up so it would go in the cook stove.
Mm-hmm.
And my father had a bad accident at the Waterport crossing on top of a railroad. There was a railroad car that was illegally parked, and he sued the railroad, and after the lawyer got his cut, my father had $300, and that was the most money that he ever had in his life at one time. And my mother and I talked him into quitting working for other farmers and start working for himself. And I told him if he would, I'd quit school. So I was at that time in Alvin High School. So I quit school when I was about 16. And he and I went to farming, a farm of 80 acres on shares.
Mm-hmm.
And we got half, and the owner got half. And we lived on it, and finally accumulated a little money so that we could buy better horses, better machinery. At first, my father took that $300 and he went to auctions around, and he picked up a whole team of horses here and there, and some used machinery, and we hired machinery and got along the best we could. But as we farmed it, we built up a little of reputation, and we could buy stuff and give our notes for it. And so we worked into better horses and better machinery. And the man that owned that 80-acre farm died. We were there about 5 years, I think. And he died, and we moved on to 180 acres, about twice as big a place. And that was owned by another man named Fuller. And we lived there 2 years, and he died. So they said we were kind of tough on the Fullers. And at that time, after Andrew Fuller died, my father moved up on the Ridge Road on the Bullard Farm, and I moved 18 miles to Clarendon. I moved up there with three teams. I was 22 years old. I moved up there with three teams of horses, two hired men, hired girl, a wife, and a baby. And I stayed in Clarendon. That was a 180-acre farm also. I stayed there 3 years. In the meantime, my father's health got bad. I had a bad heart. So I moved back onto the ridge in the tenant house of the farm where he lived. And that fall, he died. And I stayed on that farm, the Bullard farm, for 10 years. I don't know, of course, in that time, farming changed a lot. When I first started farming, all the time that I did farming, we worked with a one horse or with a one furrow plow. Only later years, I did buy a Ford tractor that drove two plows. But that darn thing, I'd go out after supper thinking I was about to do some work, and the time I got it started, I was tired out and it would be dark. So my horse and tractor never done any plowing for me much. In the beginning, there was a wooden frame made about 3 by 3 pieces of wood with spikes drove down to them, square spikes. And that was our drag. That was a peg tooth drag. And then later, they come out with a spring tooth drag made on a steel frame with an adjusting lever that you could regulate the depth of it. It was a lot better. And the first drag was 17 tooth, and they were supposed developed for a two-horse drag. And then as the time went along, they enlarged this drag till it got up to a four-horse drag. And then one man would drive four horses and do the work it used to take two men to do when they used a 17. In the beginning, you know, really before my time, they used to use a reaper. And even before that, they used a cradle. Every man to a cradle. They went to a field of grain, and maybe 5 or 6 men would swing cradle until they got cut. And they'd lay these bundled off and piles, and somebody else would come along and bind them. Mm-hmm. They used to bind them with the same stuff that, like if they were cutting oats, they'd take a handful of oat straw and give it a funny twist to make a knot, and use that to bind it. And then, really, I never done a great deal of hand binding. About the only work I'd done like that was when a binder would skip. And, when I was first starting to farm it much, the grain binders were just coming into style. Mm-hmm. And they wasn't perfect by any means, and the twine was very poor. So there were lots of skips. I'd kick out a bundle that wouldn't be tied. And so that was the only hand tying I ever done. After the cradle area was over, they had a self-rake reaper. They'd rake this grain, and there were big rakes come around and rake off a bundle at a time on one side. And other farmers or their wives or anybody that could get to work those days come along and bound them. Mm-hmm. You think I've told enough about that? You want to stop it for a minute?
Continue.
Huh?
Continue. You're doing fine.
Well,
it's very interesting.
You want to stop that a minute? When I moved to Clarendon, I said I went into a strange town. And I went down to the grocery store and I told a man where I lived, what my name was, how big a family I had. And I said, now we'll have some eggs and some butter to sell, but the majority of the stuff I want to get trusted for. And I'll pay in the fall. And I want to know if I can come here and buy my groceries and get trusted for it. I remember he let Floyd Gillis was a merchant there, and he looked at me and he said, well, you look so you pay. He said, you come and get anything you want.
Ladies, it's too bad not to interview Sadie. Well, say to you, God, she's got to be well into her 80s. Although this guy here is 91. She's under her 90s, I think. Is she? Sure she is.
It's delicious, Mike.
What? Oh,
Hazel, let me give you a fork.
Supposed to keep one.
No, I meant to get some.
Well, I got some more pork. Okay, Marjorie, flip it over. Let's...
He wasn't down the road, and that made a nice wide place for the horses to travel in. But there was no automobile at all in those days. Afterwards, the first automobiles I remember were, just about like a top buggy with no fills on it. The engine was under the seat and the crank on one side. And it had a hard rubber tire, just about like was on the buggies on it. Even some of the buggies cars when they were first put out had a whip socket. Because buggies nowadays I had a whip socket, so they put one on the automobile for some unknown reason. But that's what they do. It was my father driving one of those rigs that when he got hurt with the horse and the automobile. Oh, he got it started in the farming with that $300, and he was driving one of those buggies, and the horse run and kicked and gave him quite a bad time. The automobile gradually improved, and they got the pneumatic tires on them, you know. Mm-hmm. And you used to always have to carry a spare tire and a spare tube with you. You had to go more than 10 miles. Because you were pretty sure to have a flat tire, and you'd have to stop and take that tire off and put on another and put on a new tube and take your pump and pump it up by hand. That was a lot different than it is nowadays, where they just change the whole wheel and do it in a few minutes. I don't know what else you want me to talk about. Shut it off and give me time to think.
No, you can just carry on. How about the horses, the raising of horses?
After I moved back from Clarendon onto the gain onto the Bullitt farm and on the ridge, and I stayed there 10 years. And then in that 10 years I bought some hemlock trees and cut them and drew them and built me a house on the corner where it is now, on the corner of the water port. One of my six children was born in this house, and only one of them, my youngest one, who is now in Seattle. And during this period of time when I was on the ridge, I got into raising Persian horses. I went out to Ohio and bought 4 registered Percheron mares with foal. And I went down to Cornell and bought a registered stallion and started raising colts. And I built them up to 30 head of horses that I had on this place. And about that time, when they reached their peak, tractors commenced to come in. The horses were on the downgrade, and I sold good big Persian horses that weigh 1,800 pounds for $40 a piece. If I had bought Holstein heifers when I bought those horses, I'd been a lot better off. Then afterwards, I bought a farm down north of here, 200 acres, and started to raise cattle, and that was a good turning point, because the dairy business was on the up then. Oh, I did sell some milk for $3 a hundred. That was awful cheap, but it kept getting better and better. So it got up where it is now. And now, of course, I pick them all off with the trucks, come right to the barn, and siphon it right out of the big holding tank into the truck tank, and they go, they're all over the county, all over the country, these little trucks are. I don't know what else I can tell you.
Mr. Hallenbeck, you used to transport cattle to Buffalo?
Oh yeah, I did, but during those years I got in the racket of buying livestock, sheep and everything, and took them to the Buffalo stock market. I remember one item, I took up a load of lambs one time, and the buyer wouldn't give me what I wanted for him, and I was going to lose money, and I wouldn't sell them to him. And, but he thought he had me over a barrel, of course, because I had them there. He said, what you going to do with them? I said, I'm going to load them back on my truck and take them home. And I did. And I placed them out to other farmers, and we weighed them in, and I paid them so much a pound for all they put on them. And when they got them fatter, well, then I took them back to Buffalo and got a better price for them. So I finally come out all right. But this buyer up there, he was from Boston, I remember. He said, what you going to do with them? And I said, I'm going to load them up and take them home. That's what I did. And they, but I bought a lot of stock for 4 or 5 years. And had an old, what then wasn't an old truck. It was a hard-tired truck.
Yes.
And boy, that'd be quite a giant full of buffalo with it. But
did you have somebody go with you when you went up to Buffalo? Another man?
Hardly ever. Once in a while somebody wanted to go just for...
How about Clayton? How about Clayton Woodruff?
Well, Clayton went with me. How did you ever know about that?
He told me.
Oh, he did?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, there's several different people went with me. I know one boy, one family with me, his name was Rivers, and he was black. And we was going up there after dark, and he said, suppose somebody hold us up. I said, if they hold us up, Bill, you just keep your eyes and your mouth shut. They won't know you're in there. Oh, I had a lot of people writing me, just out of curiosity, you know. They go,
yes.
I very seldom hired anybody to go with me. But Cecil Park, after a few years, Cecil Park learned to drive my truck. And then he used to make these buffalo trips. I'd stay home and do my farming, and in the evenings I'd go out and buy stock.